Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We talk automotive maintenance and repair every so often, and we always welcome our friend Gordon Fricke, who is the owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive Incorporated, an independent repair, auto body, towing, and used car facility in Hoosick Falls, New York. Gordon has been in the automotive repair and service industry for over 30 years, beginning at Factory Mechanics Training School in Wolfsburg, Germany, back in 1979. He knows the foreign cars very well and domestic cars, as you will find on this program. The number to call is 800-348-2551. It's 800-348-2551. You can also email your questions at voxpop@wamc.org or tweet us at @WAMCVoxPop or go to our Facebook page, WAMC Radio, and you'll find a Vox Pop post there. But again, the number to call is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Ray.
Nice to have you here.
Nice to be here.
Some breaking news. Transportation officials and automakers say they've agreed to make automatic braking standard in nearly all cars within 6 years by 2022. The head of the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration says the voluntary agreement with 20 car manufacturers means that the important safety technology will be available more quickly than if the government had gone through the lengthy process of issuing mandatory rules. Automatic braking systems use cameras, radar, and other sensors to see objects that are in the way and slow or stop a vehicle if the driver doesn't react. First of all, what's your reaction to that?
Well, you know, if you ask my wife, she'd say, I can't wait, because whenever we're going somewhere, trip, vacation, soccer game, whatever, I occasionally maybe get slightly distracted and put on the brakes a little bit later than she'd like me to.
Yeah.
And I've never rear-ended another car, but if you ask my kids, you know, there's been some hanging onto the dashboard and the imaginary brake pedal. So
I get that a lot too.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Well, maybe it's not just me then.
So, I mean, have you ever tried one of these cars?
No, but you're starting to see, in particular, Subaru advertising it a lot. I don't know if you've noticed the commercials.
No, I've seen them. Yeah.
And also, I believe there's a Volkswagen commercial where the father's taking the daughter to school.
Yep.
Car slips in front of them, and they automatically. I think it's a pretty great concept, and the technology is currently in so many cars already. Any car that's got adaptive cruise control, it's watching what's going on in front of you in particular. So if the car in front of you, if you're in cruise control on the interstate, car slows down ahead of you, it turns the cruise off or relaxes your speed to compensate for it.
Wow, amazing.
So they've taken that to a further step, and they brought it into the braking system of the car.
That's, I don't think I could get used to that.
The only thing that bothers me is that you've now got a computer that's fully controlling your brakes. So I guess, I don't know, if it goes haywire, could your car go from, you know, 65 to zero in 10 seconds for no reason?
Right.
I don't know.
A little glitch. We'll fix that with a software patch. Meanwhile,
yeah, there'll be a recall. Wait 6 months.
Right. And, you know, you and I talked over a year ago, just sort of a pie-in-the-sky discussion about the possibility that all these connected vehicles could be hacked someday.
Yeah.
And now it's making news that, in fact, that's a possibility.
They have been hacked. Yes, some guys proved it.
It's terrifying. Do you think they got the idea from this program?
I hope not.
Yeah, that would be very bad.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go to the phones before something else bad happens. 800-348-2551 is the number. Kent in Stone Ridge. Kent, you're first.
Hi there. This is a question about the capabilities of a car battery. I hope this is appropriate. A while back, I had a transformer or an adapter which plugs into the cigarette lighter of the car, and the other end of it is looks like a regular house outlet that you have in your home.
Yeah, yep.
And I could plug in anything. Apparently, I don't know how big a thing I could have plugged in, but I use things in the car like, you know, that I never would have thought of using in the car. Now my question is, for example, if the power were to go out in my house, would I be able to, say, plug in my refrigerator to my car?
Oh, my gosh.
instead of relying on a generator, if that's the only thing I needed to power, and if so, would I need to have the car going, I would think? And also, how long would it last? Would it be workable?
Yeah,
so
that,
it's an inverter.
That's a really good question,
inverter.
Though. Yeah, a lot of cars have those, and oh. I have a pretty old vehicle that somebody must have retroed one in there, and I used it last weekend to charge my phone while we were taking a trip to Lake Placid. But the load capability is fairly low. You couldn't plug in your refrigerator. That draws too much current. And that inverter, or if this came equipped in your car from the factory, there should be some data on it as to what it can power.
It'll be in amps.
Yeah, yeah, amps or watts, and that'll tell you how big of a of a component you can use.
All right. And now, moving on to a related question, it's kind of the same question, really, because I have a sleep machine that I need to prevent myself from snoring and dying.
A CPAP.
I mean, a CPAP. It's I don't have it severely, but if the power goes out like it did in my area last night, both of us lose sleep. We have horrible next day. And I need to figure out a backup for the if I lose power for my just for my sleep machine, which is a pretty small unit. So I thought, you know, what if I could use my charging battery that I carry around in my car, bring it into the house, and have one of these adapters plug my sleep machine into the I think that the charging battery has a little plug for the cigarette lighter kind of thing.
There is.
So I could put the inverter into that and put it next to my bed, and then I could plug in my sleep machine.
It wouldn't last long.
There is a formula as to how many amps are in a car battery and how many hours you can draw those out of there. But you may find that after a great night of sleep, your car doesn't start the next morning.
That's a good point.
So you can't leave the car running all night. But to answer your question, it is definitely possible. As to how long it'll run, you'd need to do some math and some Ohm's law.
Okay. What I have is this. Do you know what I mean by the charging battery? It's a portable battery that I carry around in case my car battery dies.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm really talking about the capabilities of a charging battery.
Then it won't last long.
Yeah, they're pretty small, but they're also quite powerful. But again, you need to know how many amps for how long they can produce and find out what your unit draws.
Kent, thanks a lot for the call. That's a very
interesting question.
Didn't know there were inverters in cars now. So when we go on a long trip, I could bring the toaster oven.
What else can you bring?
Blender, washer, dryer.
How about the blender? Make drinks on the highway.
Oh yeah, that. What could go wrong? All right, let's go to Bob in Holland Patent. Bob, you're on.
Yes, I have. Thank you for getting me on.
Sure.
I have '86 Oldsmobile that I pulled the gas tank on. I took it to a garage and it was a hammer mechanic, I guess, and everything was screwed up. He ruined the new parts and everything. So I wound up in disgust after spending a whole barrel full of money for him to do the job, replace the brake lines, and I wound up having to do the whole job myself.
Yikes.
And at that time I was tapped out of money. So I said, well, it's either do it myself or it's not going to get done. And I was reluctant to take it somewhere else.
Yeah.
So at any rate, I got it all fixed. All new brake lines, all new fuel lines. Had to drop the tank, put a new sending unit in, the whole smear, right from end to end in this Oldsmobile.
Yeah,
and everything works fine.
Except,
I can drive that car possibly 100 miles without a problem, and other times I go out and I'll go down the road. And especially after it gets warm, and if it has somewhere under a half tank of gas, it will just quit.
Wow.
Go right along, and it just stops. It'll start petering out, and then it'll just come to a stop. And if I try to restart, it usually won't restart. But if I shut the key off for only half a minute or a minute, start it up, fires right up, and runs fine.
Okay, that's a good one.
So a couple of quick questions. Is it a fuel-injected or a carbureted engine?
It's fuel-injected.
Okay.
First year of them.
Yep, so that throws a whole bunch of things into the formula. It is possible that it is a fuel pump issue, which is in the tank.
Uh-huh.
But
and that I replaced new.
Yep.
And I even pressure tested. I put the pressure thing up on the fuel on the line up on the front, and the pressure was right up to 40 pounds where it's supposed to be.
Here's the clincher, and this is going to be hard to do, but if you could get that car to fail at home, you know, don't be stranded on the road somewhere.
It'll run for indefinitely until it runs out of gas.
That's the tough thing to do to diagnose, because if you can't make it fail and stay failed long enough to test it, you can only use some theories, best guesses, and throw parts at it, which may not be a very wise thing to do.
Yeah.
So I can only guide you in the direction of, you know, trying to maybe get a fuel pressure gauge on it and leave it on there
at the time.
Yeah, and then go drive the car. If you get it to quit, get out there and look under the hood and see if your fuel pressure went to zero or very low, and that could be the cause of the trouble. But that's going to be a tough one. I'm sorry I can't give you any definite answer there.
Bob, thanks for the call. We're going to take a break here. Gordon Fricke is our guest on Vox Pop today. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Boynton & Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, providing foreign and domestic car, truck, and SUV repair services, and a Massachusetts inspection station for over 50 years. BoyntonAndPerrin.com. Northshire Bookstore, presenting Adam Centimore, Tasting Wine and Cheese, Saturday, March 19th, 7 o'clock, in Manchester, Vermont. For tickets, visit Northshire.com. Colby Attorneys Service, corporate formations, document retrieval services, court filings, and legal publishing for the legal and professional community since 1939, ColbyService.com. And Ulster County Resource Recovery Agency, offering a household hazardous waste and pharmaceutical collection day in Kingston for all Ulster County residents on Saturday, April 16th. UCRRA.org for more information. And Harold's Ice Cream, Thorne's Marketplace, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts. Over 300 flavors of handcrafted dairy and dairy-free ice creams, cakes, hot fudge, and more. Harold's.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Ray Graff here, Gordon Fricke across the desk, and it's our automotive maintenance and repair program. And before the show started, you said oil sludge is an issue.
Yeah, it's almost weekly. We are running into more and more issues with extended oil changes, higher tech engines with variable cam timing or variable valve timing. And these engines have mechanisms, solenoids, valves, and tiny passages that are channeling the pressurized oil from the oil pump to do things other than just lube the engine. And what we're finding is the oil change intervals are becoming extended by the car makers and pressure by the EPA. And then the owner of the car maybe gets a little bit careless. And if they say change it every 10,000, it might get changed every 15,000. Mm. And in the younger years of the car, there's no issues. But when they reach 70, 60, 70, 80, 90, 100,000 miles, we see these camshaft issues and timing chain issues. And it really finishes off these engines, because to fix them is far too labor intensive. So now you got to either replace it or just get rid of the car.
So I think the moral of the story is follow the specs of your manufacturer and maybe even be a little more conservative than that.
You almost need to cut them in half.
Mm. Okay. Ooh, that reminds me.
I read something today from Porsche, and they recommended on some of their cars to change the oil every 3,000 to 5,000 miles using the best synthetic.
Well, if you're going to buy a Porsche, right, you should get the best possible oil for your vehicle.
Yes.
Otherwise, you buy a Yugo, right? All right, this one, we'll get back to the phones in a minute, 800-348-2551. This one is from Brian, came in via email. Great show as usual. Well, very wise, Brian. Compliment the program, you'll get on the show. I have a 2001 Chevy 2500 whose horn refuses to hoot. I replaced the blown fuse, which proceeded to blow again. Looks like there is a relay in the fuse box. Should I assume that this might be the culprit? Till then, I'm waving my hands and yelling out the window. Which must be hilarious to see, Brian.
You could get one of those bulb horns that they had on the cars of the teens.
Like Mr. Magoo.
Yeah, exactly.
Roadhog!
Exactly.
I like that. So what do you do?
I think what's happening to his vehicle is the horns are drawing way too much current, and that's why it keeps blowing the fuse.
Yeah.
The relay just transfers the power from the horn button, connects it, and gives you more power out to the horns. I'm sure he's got one or both of the horns drawing too much current, blowing the fuse.
Ah.
So he needs a horn or horns.
So the horn itself
is
the culprit here.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
All right, fair enough. Yep. They're not expensive, right?
Not really.
All right, and fairly easy to replace, depending on the vehicle?
Some cars, they're super easy. Some cars, they're buried. I don't think on that pickup it's too bad, though.
I think my Caddy's had two horns. They
most of them do now. Most cars have dual horns.
All right, let's go back to the phones at 800-348-2551. Alex in Amsterdam. Alex.
Hi. I have a question about interference engines related to interference engines related to. I had a Volkswagen Passat. I love the Passat, but the engine had an interference in. There was an axial keyway in the back of the crankshaft that had smeared, and I blew all the valves out. So it was just after I got the car. I did it again. And don't you think 20,000 miles later, it happened again? I was wondering if they still had those kinds of engines.
Before you start, interference engines, what are they?
Yeah, what that means is the relationship of the valves and the pistons is such that if the timing chain or belt breaks or jumps a bunch of teeth, the pistons will now smash into the open valves, which means serious engine damage.
Okay, so why build an engine like that?
That's a good question, because years ago they were freewheeling engines where if something occurred with the valve train drive system, the engine would just quit.
Right.
You'd get towed in, and it wouldn't be destroyed. It has to do with higher performance out of smaller engines, opening the valves further, again, for performance and economy, and just packaging. Everything is tighter, everything is smaller, and they make everything as compact as possible. So most engines today are of the interference design.
Okay.
And that's bad when things like this happen. So so getting to Alex's question, so what was the crux of the question once we got off on the tangent?
I was wondering if they got away from interference engines, but it sounds like more cars are interference today than they used to be.
Yes, yeah. More and more are becoming that way just for those very reasons. A lot of them now are becoming chain-driven that were previously belt-driven. And the chain doesn't require the periodic maintenance like a timing belt does. However, going back to our famous, important oil topic, the chain engines can suffer trouble from lack of oil changes and sludge formation and extra wear from all the junk in the oil that didn't get drained out that wears out the guides and the tensioners and the chain stretches, and you end up with a similar problem again. So,
but a more expensive problem.
It can be way more expensive, yes.
Okay.
So good and bad.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Alex. We appreciate the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. Robert in Catskill. Robert, you're on.
Good afternoon, Gordon. Robert in Catskill.
Hello.
It was supposed to be a 57 Chevy, but I made a boo-boo as my 57 Caddy.
I was gonna say, this must be the Cadillac call. You're about due.
No, I have the 57 Chevy also, but that's not the problem. I'm pulling my hair out, and I should know how to do this. My rear directional and taillight are out. No big deal. But if I put a test light to it, there's no power, but the directionals still blink correctly, and the front one is going at normal speed. I'm having no power to the right rear. And don't they come to a junction somewhere? Please tell me it's not my directional switch.
It could be, because the directionals, you know, they can send one wire back to run your brake lights and one wire back to run your parking lights, but you need two wires for your directionals. what I would do is with a test light, make sure you've got a beautiful, perfect ground on the other end of that light. Go poke it at, probe another wire or a circuit just to make sure you got a good connection, and then follow that color wire forward. On that 57, it should be pretty easy to follow that harness, and just trace it back and work your way towards the front. And if you find you've got no signal all the way up to the switch, it could be the directional switch itself.
But that
won't be too terrible of a job on that car because everything's pretty much out in the open.
Yeah, because there's no power at all to the right rear end. You know, but the funny thing about it is that usually when there's a problem with that, the front directional would, you know, do double speed or...
Yeah, it does on newer cars. I don't know if, you know, if a car of that vintage, if the flasher will be that greatly affected to make it blink twice as fast, but it could. But the fact that you've got your brake and your directional out could originate at the switch. It's very possible.
Right. I don't remember if the regular taillight comes on or not. I should have known that before I called in.
Yeah, just.
But I walked in the house and I saw you were on.
I would recheck it again and just make sure your light's got a good ground and work your way forward.
Yeah, that makes sense. And speaking of 57s, what's your opinion about overdrive transmission conversions?
You know, they were pretty popular in the day, and there's some cars that he actually had them from the factory, and you can buy those, of course. Gear Vendors makes a nice one, and it lets you have let's say a muscle car with a super low rear end ratio, and you can really hammer through that 4-speed. But when you're cruising at 55 or 60, it sounds like the engine's going to explode. You can get one more gear out of it.
Yeah.
So it's a nice item.
Yeah, this is a 283 with a turbo 350, and I have a 700 R4. You know, I'm not sure if it's enough conversion.
Oh, you're thinking of changing the whole transmission.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you can do that. Yeah, a lot of modifiers are doing that with Chevys with that overdrive tranny. Yeah. Yeah, that's not a bad idea.
Hey, Robert, thanks.
A pleasure as always.
Thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. This was just handed to me. The National Weather Service in Albany has issued a severe thunderstorm warning for northwestern Saratoga County in east central New York and southeastern Fulton County in eastern New York until 2:45. So once again, a severe thunderstorm warning for northwestern Saratoga County and southeastern Fulton County. Seems like spring is here already.
Yeah.
Right? Let's go to David in Irving, Mass. David, you're on.
Yes, well, you're talking about the automatic braking systems in cars. Every time I hear about that, I'm concerned because I've been driving for 50-plus years, and what I've experienced is probably a dozen times where I've gotten out of a fix because I've watched the car behind me as I brake. So I put as much brake as I could put on to not have him hit me, and to stay off the tail of somebody else or whatever it is, and that's what concerns me in terms of, you know, I like to do my own driving, but to have something be automatic,
right? It's kind of like the chain reaction. The first vehicle stops too fast, and car number two hits it, and three hits two, and it keeps going down the line. Now, here's a great theory. If 10 cars had this system, would they all stop in time without hitting each other?
Oh, that's a good question.
Be a good test.
All right, we'll find out. David, thanks a lot for the call. Our number to call here is 800-348-2551. You know, it's only a question of time before driving itself is done by the robots.
You can put your feet up and relax.
I don't like it.
I don't think that's ever going to happen.
Well, they're testing the Google cars, and they're having some issues at times.
Yeah, maybe you're going to find in heavy metropolitan areas, there's going to be lanes or roads strictly for those vehicles, maybe? I don't know.
I don't like it. I mean, a flying car, yeah, I'm down with that.
Well, the popular mechanics magazine out of the 60s,
right? They never happened. I thought by the year 2000.
Yeah.
Nope. Let's go to Susan in Sunderland, Mass. Susan.
Hi. I have a question, but I wanted to make a comment that segues from what you all were just talking about with the car's driving for you.
Yeah.
Because I just had this conversation with a friend. I was reading the new Consumer Reports car issue.
Yeah.
Where they talk about you know, just what you've been saying, the car is going to break for you, some cars already park for you, all of that kind of thing. And it really, I'd rather drive my car than have the car driving me around.
Yeah, well, that's the fun of it, isn't it?
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, I mean, why have a car if you don't want to drive it?
I even, if I'm traveling and have the cruise control on and it's trying to maintain the correct speed, which it does, and sometimes it does it more than you'd like it to, so you feel like the car is going out of control on you.
Right, and you get this like kind of acceleration feeling.
But if you look,
and when I was listening to you, I had this thought about you know, if people really don't want to be driving their cars, then why don't we increase our public transportation, and instead of having our own individual public transportation that drives us.
Well, that's a whole other show. You're right in the NPR wheelhouse there. We'll talk high-speed rail,
Yeah, so anyway, well, and I live in Western Mass where there's not a lot of public transportation if you need to use it for work.
Yeah.
But here's my question. I have a Honda Accord. It's my second Accord. It has 130,000-plus miles. And I'm starting to think about a new car. And first, I don't know why in particular, but I've started thinking about a Subaru.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if your person there,
Gordon,
has any comments about Subaru versus Honda Accord and whatever the Subaru equivalent is.
I just want to throw it out there that we're not really allowed to say this is better than that, but Gordon can sort of
share some general
thoughts.
Yeah. I won't be the spokesperson for Honda or Subaru.
It being public radio.
Yeah, although those are both good makers of cars.
Wonderful. Yeah. And our legal department thanks you.
So you've got, if you're going to a Subaru from a Honda Accord, you're going to be going to an all-wheel drive car. All Subarus are all-wheel drive, which is very good. Are you talking about a sedan, like a legacy sedan?
I guess so, because I would want or a hatchback.
Yeah. They're both well-proven cars. They both have good track records. I think it's going to be a matter of preference. You should, if you're going to try to switch and if you're accustomed to Hondas, test drive some Subarus and make sure you feel okay in the car. You know, they're a little bit, they feel different. But it's you're certainly not making a bad decision.
Because I like the, you know, I like to drive, so I like the tightness of the Honda steering.
Yeah, I think you're going to get a similar feeling in the Subaru. European cars always were noted for being very tight and heavy and responsive feeling and very safe and secure, where the Japanese cars always got the kind of a rap of being a little bit lighter, looser, and flimsier feeling. Mm. But they have done a lot to tighten those cars up and feel heavier. So I would definitely drive that Subaru extensively, but you're not going to an inferior car.
Good. Susan, thank you for the call.
Thanks a lot.
You know, it's funny about cruise control. Regardless of how long my trip is, I will never use cruise control.
You never use it?
Never.
I like to use it when I can and I can relax my legs a little bit, but I'm not using it constantly because you're right. I like to control the car. I like to drive.
Well, you know, the Murphy's Law is if I put it on, I'll get suddenly behind someone who's going 12 miles an hour under the speed limit, and it'll drive me absolutely out of my mind.
Yes, and you got to knock the cruise off, and now you're slowing down too fast. Now you're speeding back up. I know.
Right, right. Yeah. And plus, it annoys my family much less when the cruise control is on. And I like to have my foot on the gas.
Keep everybody stoked up a
little
bit.
Faster, slower.
Yeah.
Hit the brakes. Keep everybody awake. Let's go to Jim and Adams. Jim, you're on.
Hey, Ray.
Hey.
Yes, I'm talking about these oil filtration systems where you only take out the filter and replace the one quart of oil or so that is missing with the filter, and you continue with the same oil. I know a fellow down the street from me that started a dealership for one of these companies some years ago, and he's been still doing it. So what is your opinion on these systems?
I would not do it at all.
Not.
Nope. If it
been doing it for 20 years or so.
In an industrial setting where you have maybe a stationary engine that runs something, or locomotives, things like that, train engines, they hold way more oil than like a car engine going down the road does. Mm-hmm. So you got a massive volume of oil, and Yes, it has tremendous filtration. And what they do with industrial engines and locomotives is they're on a schedule. They take a sample of the oil. They see how it's doing. And then they change the filters appropriately and maybe put some additives in there. But the car environment is so harsh, so many variables, idling, stop-and-go traffic, 10 below zero today, 50 tomorrow. The oil can handle it chemically, but the added contaminants pile up in it, and then you're dragging around moisture.
Those get filtered out from the filter?
Well, that's it, but I don't know if these filters are that capable and if the oil's getting monitored. I see too many engine problems due to oil problems, so I wouldn't be an advocate of that myself.
Well, you're putting a new filter in on recommended intervals, so it's just the same as changing the oil. You're changing the dirty filter out, getting a new clean filter.
Yeah, it's definitely a good theory. I just don't like it. I like my engine to get fresh, clean oil at very, very regular intervals.
Okay.
20 years or more with his vehicles and his customers' vehicles.
Well, that's good. Well,
they analyze samples of the filter. You can send them into the company, and
if I had a late model variable valve timed engine, I wouldn't want to be relying on that when the car hit 100,000 miles and they said your engine sludged.
Okay. Well, Jim, thank you for the call, and we appreciate that information. The number to call here is 800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop. It is Automotive Day with Gordon Fricke, and we'll hit the home stretch in a moment.
Support for WAMC comes from Capital Region Language Center, with locations in Colony and Saratoga, teaching 12 languages for children and adults. crlcalbany.org for details. Union Gables Mansion Inn, Saratoga Springs, celebrating 25 years of preserving the Victorian mansion with gardens, wraparound porches, Romanesque pool, fountains, and more. UnionGables.com. Agricultural Stewardship Association, helping people conserve farmland in the Upper Hudson Valley. We conserve good farmland for good forever. agstewardship.org. And Edgar Bosick, Certified Financial Planner, Private Financial Design, South Hadley. Your life, your plan, your portfolio. PrivateFinancialDesign.com. Securities through Cambridge Investment Research, member FINRA and SIPC.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. Number to call is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. And Gordon, this one came in from James, who says, greetings, great show.
Nice.
Rule number one, compliment the show you're in. I have a 2013 Ford Focus I bought used. Everything works well. I just feel that when my blinker, it's loud. Not overly loud. My old Ford Focus blinker was loud, and all other Focuses I have been in were that way. Is this just the model? Why would they make it louder than other models? Any way to have that sound turned off or down?
I doubt it. And
what makes the sound?
Well, it used to be they called it a flasher unit.
Mechanical device.
Yeah, and it was a mechanical device making that clicking sound.
Yep.
And they turned into electronic relays that still made that sound because they want the driver to know the blinker's on.
Right.
Because if it's just the blinking light, you'll drive around the world going left. You know, the blinker will be on all day.
And then you might as well move to Florida.
Yeah.
Right.
So I don't think you could calm that sound down unless that car is sophisticated enough to have a menu where you can tailor things like your lights and your auto locks and all your stuff. I doubt there's a function to quiet the directional sound
down. That's a great question. I mean, I would Google that and see if someone's found out a hack for that one.
Yeah, or call Ford, open up the owner's manual, and there's got to be a customer service line. Be an interesting question.
Great question. Yeah. Let's go to the phones. Richard in Averill Park. Richard.
Hi. I just want to first make a comment on the cruise control. I've been using it for years, and I love it, and I haven't had a speeding ticket in 20 years.
Oh, good for you.
Treatment for a lead foot.
Nice.
My question is with regard to an older Ford F-150. It's got a 5.4 liter. Got about 120,000 miles on it now, and the exhaust manifolds on it is pretty rusty. I haven't done much. I've done some work on different things. I've not really gotten to where I'm taking anything off the engine block and trying to replace it. And before I start doing anything like that, I'm trying to figure out how am I going to get into something that's going to lead to something else, like a catalytic converter or other stuff that goes on. I don't know.
Yeah. So you're going to be having to change those manifolds. Is that what you're thinking about getting in there? Yeah. Yeah. It's common on that engine. And the trouble that you will run into more than likely are broken studs that hold those manifolds on. The heads of those bolts, the heads of those, the nuts that are on those studs are going to be so corroded there may be nothing left to them. It is so tight inside that compartment that it's a really murderous job. I think the Ford dealers probably cringe, but they do so many of these. But it's a really, really nasty job that if you don't have torches and all the stuff to do it, it would be a very bad backyard project.
Okay. That's what I was afraid of.
Yeah,
but.
That's the story on those.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Enjoy the show.
Thanks, Richard. We appreciate the call. This one came in from Elise in Albany via email. I'm currently driving a 2005 Mazda 6 with a 5-speed manual transmission, DOHC. That's dual overhead cam?
Yeah.
That's about 130K on it. That's 130,000 miles. Anytime I stop at a red light or I'm sitting idle, the oil light flickers. It stops as soon as I touch the gas pedal. Had it checked out, was told it might be an oil pump, but that they wouldn't know without tearing apart the engine. Otherwise, they didn't have an answer. Time for a new ride? That's from Elise.
Yeah, that's not a good sign, because if they did actually do a pressure test and confirmed that it wasn't just the sending unit that turns the light on malfunctioning, which it can be, then yes. And it's usually not just the oil pump. It's probably got wear further in the engine in other areas, you know, bearings. Anything in the pressurized oil stream. If it's got too much tolerance, the oil pressure is going to go down, and a new oil pump won't help it. It'd be like opening up your upstairs faucet in your house. All that water up there is draining out, and if the pump can only provide so much water, another pump's not going to change that scenario. So she could be talking about engine problems.
And so how long do you figure she can drive the thing if it just flickers when she stopped?
Well, that's a good question. It may hold up quite a while, and what she can do now that it's getting warmer is go up to some heavier oil. Go up to like a 20W50 weight motor oil.
Yeah.
And it's going to boost the pressure because it's thicker.
Oh,
and that will help it survive.
So maybe her oil is too thin.
Well, she's using whatever oil is required for the car.
How do you know?
Well, you can't go too thin. That car probably was calling for 5W30 anyway, which is pretty standard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Kurt in Middlebury, Vermont. Kurt.
Oh, hey, how's it going, guys?
Hi.
Well, one question about the cruise control is, do you get better gas mileage using cruise control on longer trips?
That old question.
And we don't have to get too deep into it, so that's not my real question. But
I wouldn't be surprised, and I'm sure there's studies on it. In the overall trip, it's probably a little bit better because it's keeping the engine much more regulated.
Well, you know, we got an email from Jamie who was saying, Ray, you know, cruise control has changed. Now they run off GPS, automatically slow down when traffic calls for it, and go back to the speed when they need to, and you get better gas mileage. This is according to Jamie, who is obviously could be an expert, but might have no knowledge whatsoever. He says,
sure.
Someday people will look back and wonder, how did we let people operate such dangerous machines called cars? It'll be a sad day.
Yeah.
All right, what's your question, Kurt?
2009 Subaru Impreza Outback Sport, brought it into the shop, and they said the head gasket was leaking, but so they would just do a complete gasket job on the engine. Ended up having to bring it back twice because the rear main seal wouldn't seal. The first time they didn't have an explanation, second time they said it sucked into the motor, so they ended up JB welding it in place. So my question is, Why would that have happened, if you have any theories on that? And secondly, what would be, how likely would it be that I could replace that again in the future if it went?
Well, the need for the JB Weld is a little bit strange because, you know, the seal fits in just so.
That's
and
right.
I could see if maybe it was a inferior aftermarket seal, you know, but if they tried different seals or went to Subaru and bought a genuine seal.
Which they said, they claimed they did.
Yeah.
On the second one.
Kind of either fits properly or it doesn't, unless there's a problem where the seal is seating into the engine.
Sure.
So I can't answer. I don't know, because that's a little odd that the seal would, if the seal quote sucked in, which is not that likely, the PCV valve or the ventilation system needs to be carefully checked to make sure there's not too much vacuum on the engine.
Gotcha.
And there's also a leak that's common on those. The head gaskets are very common on those.
Right.
The oil pressure sending units are very common to leak. There's, on that engine, I think there's one per cylinder head. And the oil will run down the back of the head and run down the back of the engine. And if you don't follow the leak all the way to the source, it'll fool people into thinking other things are leaking.
Gotcha.
So those pressure switches are very prone to leak, and they need to be really looked at carefully.
Sure. So what's the likelihood, if this thing ends up leaking again, that the seal could be removed and a new one put in, since it was JB welded? Is that kind of like the last straw?
Well,
here,
the JB weld is an epoxy, so I mean it's not like kryptonite. You know, you can get around it, but I'm just not sure what needed to be JB welded, to be honest with you.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I wasn't either.
Well, let us know. Yeah, get us an update on a future program, Kurt.
Will do. Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much. 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest. And Scott in Sandersfield, Mass., you're on.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Happy St. Patrick's Day.
And to you.
Yeah.
So I have a 1998 Jeep Grand Cherokee, and I'm having a hard time getting it to shift into four-wheel drive low. It's got the quadratrack transmission, and when I take it out of four high, goes to neutral, and then it'll make a wicked grinding noise going into four low.
Oh boy!
Now, I don't know if it's something I should like just exercise or.
So this thing has a separate shift lever for your four-wheel drive functions. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. When you're going into four low, I mean, you're obviously at a stop. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, but it'll grind even at your at a stop.
Yep. It grinds going in, and it grinds coming back out into four high.
Like a big bang, or like gear teeth chattering against each other?
Gear teeth chattering, and then a bang.
Wow.
But I try not to put myself in situations where I need four low.
Yeah, I was going to say that four low sounds really great, but do you ever really need it? I mean, even if you do a little bit of hunting or fishing or off-roading, you never really need, unless you're off-roading with this thing, you know?
Once in a while.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it could be that there's just a lot of wear and play in that transfer case. And I don't think there's much you're going to do externally. If you're having trouble moving the lever around, you can lube up all the moving components to the mechanism, because there's linkage underneath there going to the transfer case.
Okay.
That'll make everything move easier. And it's very possible that it's giving you so much trouble shifting it that you're not maybe shifting it quickly enough, but at a dead standstill in...
Yeah, I've tried it in park. I've tried it in neutral.
Yeah. Yeah, there shouldn't be a lot of stuff crashing around in there at a stop. If you're creeping or moving, that's a different story.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Scott, thanks a lot for the call.
One more comment, though, real quick.
Sure.
On the Textron, I had some valve flutter. I poured that in a gas tank, and it cured it. Awesome.
Yeah,
thank you so
great
much.
Stuff.
Thanks a lot for the call. Over to Sean and Kinderhook. Sean.
Yay. First, I got two things, but the first thing is, if you leave your blinker on, you're oblivious. Okay.
Fine.
Right.
Gotcha.
The second thing is, I have a 2012 Chevy Cruze. Do I have a timing belt or a timing chain? And if so, how often should it be replaced?
Yeah, I'm almost 100% sure that that Cruise has a chain. I believe that's a 1.4 engine, a little turbocharged engine. Have you been?
Well, yeah, they have a 1.4 and I believe a 1.6, maybe a 1.8. I don't know.
What is yours?
Mine's the 1.4.
Yeah, that's a nice little engine, very fuel efficient, and I'm almost sure that's a chain engine, which requires no chain maintenance or tensioner issues, just adequate oil changes.
Right, and that's the thing. But I commute every day about 70 miles a day there and back. So, I mean, do I get more out of my oil for being I'm 99% highway miles.
Yeah. I mean, you could probably go to 5,000 miles. Is that what you're doing now?
Yeah, well, I kind of am cheating. I went a little over, but now I'm going to make sure I'm vigilant.
Yeah, I personally wouldn't go over 5, even on your commute. And that the oil that car requires has got a Dexos classification from General Motors, and it's synthetic oil, so it's top grade oil.
Okay.
Right. Thank you.
Hey, Sean, thanks a lot for the call. Over to Bill in Johnstown. Is it Johnstown?
Yes.
You're on.
Thank you. I have a 2010 Tacoma, a four cylinder stick shift, and it's got 136,000 miles on it. I've gotten two noises this over the winter, and I'm wondering if they're reason for concern. One is I keep it in the garage, so it's usually not out in the real cold. But if I go out in the morning and going down the street in first and second gear, there's a slight tapping that increases as I go faster, and then as I let off on the gas, the tapping sound goes away. And then after a mile or two or even less, I just don't notice it again, so I think it goes away. And the second noise is if I have the truck running in and put it in neutral with the parking brake on, release the clutch, there's a not a bad noise, but there's a sound there that goes away when I push the clutch in.
Yeah.
So I wondered if either one of those are a reason for concern. And the last thing I'll just mention is on my last oil change, I think they put in about a quart too much oil because it looks like it's that far above the fill mark on the dipstick.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, so is that are any of those reasons for concern?
Okay, so the tapping noise, if you can simulate that, reproduce that noise without driving, just by increasing the RPMs and letting them down, then that's isolated to the engine. And what you could be hearing is piston to cylinder noise, or you could be hearing some valve train noise. Which I don't think at that age and mileage I'd be too overly concerned unless it's real loud.
No, it's not.
The second noise is the sound of the transmission. When you let the clutch out, it turns the main shaft in the transmission, and you're hearing everything working in the transmission or spinning. Again, probably not anything to worry about. Fluid maintenance, I don't know if Toyota has any intervals on changing that transmission oil, but that would be something just to consider if it's in your maintenance manual.
Okay.
And what was the last one?
If can you hurt it by putting, say, a quart too much oil in?
Well, it you shouldn't be over full. That range, you know, when you pull your dipstick out, there's two marks there. And
right. The
ideal place for that to be is in the middle, but it doesn't want to be any further than the top mark when the engine's fully warmed up and having been shut off and sitting for at least 5 or 10 minutes. So
okay.
I wouldn't want it a quart over.
Bill, thanks a lot for the call. We're about out of time here. This one came in via email from, I believe, Suzanne, who asks, is there any way to adjust the door opening mechanism to make it stay open more reliably? I hate it when the door starts to close on my foot when I'm entering or exiting the vehicle.
No, can't adjust it.
No?
Some cars, they're stiffer than others.
Okay.
You know, some resist some wind, and others are pretty easy to shut. But I don't think there's anything you can do unless you neglect that thing and don't ever lube it up. Maybe it'll
let
get
it
stiffer.
Rust.
Might take a year or two.
Or three or four.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess that's it for the program. Gordon Fricke, thank you very much for being here today. Thanks to everybody who called in. And support comes from Apex Solar Power, Queensbury, New York. Locally owned and operated, installing solar panels, solar hot water, solar pool heating. ApexSolarPower.com for information. New York State Maple Producers. The New York State Maple Producers hosting Maple Weekend Open Houses March 19th, 20th, April 2nd and 3rd. Find a sugar house at mapleweekend.com. And Arkell Museum at Canajoharie presenting Edward Bike, picturing the American Revolution, juxtaposing a 20th century view of the Revolutionary War with 18th century portraits. ArkellMuseum.org. Thanks again to Gordon Fricke. Thanks to you for listening and for calling and for emailing. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Phones were answered by Deb Malik. Jessica Blaustein Marshall is our producer. I'm Ray Graff. I almost forgot my own name. It's been a long week. It's very hot in here. I think I'm falling asleep. Not your fault, Gordon. Tomorrow it's Food Friday. We'll try to stay awake for that one.